So it's, I apologize for the warmth in the base medrash. If you fall asleep because of it, that's okay. And one time somebody fell asleep during the shmooze. So somebody asked like how I felt. I said I felt very good. This person got a chance to be rested. He went home. Afterwards, he was very rested. He said he was nice to his wife, and I got all the exclusive because I said the shmooze and he fell asleep. So like why should I be upset? The Shavuos is a fascinating Yom Tov. The Torah gives it multiple names. The Goyen actually says there's a remez in the name Shavuos. If you write the word Shavuos without the vav, without the nikud, so it's Shin, Beis, Ayin, Tov. Shin is for Shavuos, Beis is for Bikurim, Ayin is for Atzeres, and Tov is for Matan Torah. For Torah, so in the name Shavuos, you have the remez of the names of the Yom Tov. But actually, the Torah has two other names for it. The Torah refers to it as Chag HaKotzir in Parshas Mishpatim. So in Kapitel Chav Gimel, Pasuk Tezayin, Al Pasuk Yudal says Shalosh Reglim is Tochagli Bashana is Chag HaMatzos Tishmor. That's Pasuk Tezvav. Pasuk Tezayin V'Chag HaKotzir V'Kirei Maasecha Shetizah Basodeh V'Chag HaSif B'Tzeis Hashana. So the Torah refers to it as Chag HaKotzir, and it's also referred to as Yom HaChamishim. So the Rosh HaTevis, the remnant for that is Chukas Sheva. Chamishim, Kotzir, Torah is Chukas, Sheva is Shavuos, Bikurim, Atzeres. So the Torah is Kaveya, different names for the Yom Tov. The Torah is Kaveya, different names for the Yom Tov. Each name obviously in some way adds to our understanding of what the Yom Tov represents. So, a name, for those of you who have not heard it from me yet, you will hear from me again, right? Right? The name is that describes what's the Metzias and what something is there. So, the Ibn Ezra points out that the word shame, name, is related to the word shom, which means there. So I want to tell you about somebody who he is. I say, listen, he's 5'8" and he has black hair and he wears glasses, etc. I'm not sure what you mean. Reuven. Oh, that's who you mean. So it's a way to point to the person. There he is. Shame is related to the word shaw. So shame regards to Yom Tov means that there is the Yom Tov. There it is. The name captures what the Yom Tov means. The Torah gives the Yom Tov multiple names, means there are different elements in the Yom Tov which need to be understood, how each one is in some way enhancing, expanding our understanding of the Yom Tov. Furthermore, the idea that the Yom Tov are called, it's called Chag HaKotzir, it's the Chag HaAviv, the Torah refers to in Parshas Kisisa, the Torah again says the Yom Tov, and it calls the Chag Shavuos to Selachah B'Kirei Kitzir Chitim, the Chag HaSif to Kuvas HaShana. So the Torah describes the Chag HaMatzah is B'Chodesh HaAviv. It's B'Dafka. It has to do with Aviv, Kotzir, Asifa. So the Goyim also have their harvest festivals. So the Torah is connecting it to the harvest. That's very strange. So the Moral says that Pasuk in Kohelet, Ki Goyim Al Gavoa. The way I've seen it brought down, there's Gemara in Shabbos in the first parak. The Gemara in Shabbos says that in Noisim Matana L'Chaveroi Tzarech L'Hoidiyoi. If I give a person a matana, so he should appreciate what he's getting. I have to inform him that I gave it to him. So the Moor says a story that if you give a meal to a child, so you took care of the child, the mother is not aware that you took care of her child. If she'd be aware, it would create a friendship between the two of you. You've fed her child. Jewish mother loves that her children should be fed. You fed her child, she appreciates that very much. So the child is not necessarily going to go home and inform his mother what happened. So the Moor says the solution is you take a little bit of the jelly and you smear it on his face. All right, see, the kid doesn't mind having jelly in his face. He goes home and says, why is the jelly on your face? Says, oh, because I was by Rabbi Rangel's house and he gave me a jelly sandwich. Oh, So she called, but why you give my son jelly? No, no. Okay, whatever. You give him something that, you know, the mother will appreciate. So more sincere, lo diyoy. So Tosha says, we find matah b'seisr yachafa av. Pasuk says in Mishlei that if you give a dafka matah b'seisr, Tosha says when you're giving it derech tzedaka, not as a friendship, but as a tzedaka, that obviously it's embarrassing to the person. It's better that it should be b'seisr. It should be anonymous. But if it's a question of relationship and I want to enhance the relationship, I want to be friends with you, that you should know that I gave you a matana, you should be aware of it. Rabbi Victor Miller Zatzal said, you know, once upon a time, the mashal that you use is a little bit outdated for most of you, that the precision of a watch, that it should run perfectly, nowadays it's done digitally. It's done with the more, even nowadays, the chronological watches, which are done, you know, made, there's the precision is that they have these little cogs inside, these little wheels inside, which are moving, and if they wear away and they don't work well, they're not precise, it's not going to keep time well. So that what you put, instead of using metal, you use gems, you use jewels. And these are very can be very sharp, and they can remain sharp for quite a long time. So the more expensive watches will tell you it's a 17 jewel watch, it's a 21 jewel watch. So you give somebody a matana with the watches. Don't take out the piece of paper which says how many jewels the watch is. You want them to know that you bought them a watch which is a very expensive watch. You didn't buy them just a regular watch. Let them know that, because the whole purpose of giving a matana is to create a relationship between two people, to enhance the friendship. You should know that I was willing to spend a lot of money on you. So Baruch Hashem gives Klai Yisrael a matana, called Pesach, called Shuas, called Sukkos. And the Baruch Hashem, besides giving us the Yom Tov, there are certain hashpos and certain the opportunities which the Baruch Hashem puts in the Bria that you should be aware of that come together with the Yom Tov. So how are you going to know? So Baruch Hashem takes that Madrega of Gavoy Mal Gavoy of the Ruchnius, and he expresses it in Gashmis as well. So he gives us a gashmistic expression of the Ruchnius, so I'm aware of it. So Pesach is the time of the year of Hiskachus. How do I know that? Because the Baruch Hashem made the natural reality of Hiskachus, the physical Hiskachus, or the springtime, to parallel the Ruchniistic reality, so you could become aware that if you want to be Mechadish yourself, or you want to get Hiskachus, this is the time of year where Ruchnius can mean Hiskachus. How do you know? Because the Baruch Hashem informed you through the Gashmius. So it's Gavur Me'al Gavur, the post is referring to the Madregas and Madregas in Shemayim. There's something which exists at a very high level in a very Ruchniistic way, and as it's brought down to lower and lower levels, it becomes more and more physical. So that which we're seeing in a physical expression really starts out in a Ruchniistic expression. So Shavuos is Chag HaKotzer, Sukkos is Chag HaOsif. So the agricultural cycle of Eretz Yisrael would rain in the winter. They would plant towards the end of the winter. Something more, so they would actually plant. They could do multiple cycles. They would plant towards the end of the winter. It would grow, and they needed the sun to grow. So that would the springtime. The rain is tapering off, but the sun is coming out. It would grow. They would start the Kotzer Shavuos time, and then it would continue through the summer. They would leave it out until in the fields to dry. Because you want to store it away, it has to be totally dry, otherwise it's going to rot. If it's summertime, it doesn't rain in Eretz Yisrael, you can leave it out to dry. Right before the rainy season in the winter, they would bring it back into the house. Chag HaOsif. So Chag HaOsif represents the idea that there's gathering in gathering. So there's a tremendous opportunities of absorbing in certain ruchnius. Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkos time. So what's Chag HaKotzer? What's the Chag HaKotzer? What does that represent to us? How is that enhancing our understanding of the Yom Tov? What does it mean that it's a Chag HaKotzer? Now, Kotzer is referring to grain which is growing, and it comes the Shavuos time is when the harvest season is upon them. You're not celebrating harvesting. You're celebrating that the grain has grown to the point that you can harvest it. The harvest itself is not the advantage. It's the growth of the grain which you're celebrating. So we're looking at grain. Grain is, so you put a seed in the ground, it grows, you harvest it, and that's it. The plant is gone. Next year you start over again. What's interesting is the Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah that the Shavuos is connected to the Peres Ha'ilah. It says, with Shavuos, you're needing up Peres Ha'ilah. So why is Shavuos connected to Peres Ha'ilah, which is about trees which already exist, which are producing fruit, not growing anew, fresh from the ground every single time? So the Peres Ha'ilah is Shavuos. And what's going on? There's a Gemara Megillah. The Gemara Megillah says that the meaning is Ezra Tikkun Lehem. More says Ezra Tikkun Lehem, that they would lay in the klolus b'taras kahanim before atzeres. That's the Gemara's name for Shavuos, and the klolus, which is a Mishnah Torah, lifnei Rosh Hashanah. More says why? Tikla Shana b'kilo yisrael. Let the year with all of its klolus be finished, and the new year should start with bracha. Tosfos says that our kaviyus is we bedafka do not do it immediately adjacent to the yomtiv, because that itself might be a siman ra that you go from klala straight into the yomtiv. So there's always a buffer zone. So we lay in b'chul koisai, and you lay in b'midbor. You'll never have shuas immediately after b'chul koisai. There's always the buffer of b'midbor between b'chul koisai and shuas. There's always a buffer of nitzavim between kisavai and Rosh Hashanah. How we were conveying whether it's something or because in this chaber depends totally on this issue. Depending on if there's a Shabbos between Yom Kippur and Sukkot, so that's going to be Hazinu, which means that the Shabbos of Aseres Yemei Tshuva is going to be Vayelech, and you cannot do it in some Vayelech together, then you would have Kisavah right before Rosh Hashanah. So you have to split Nitzav and Vayelech. So if there's a Shabbos between Yom Kippur and Sukkot, by definition, Nitzav and Vayelech are separate. They have Nitzav before Rosh Hashanah. They have a buffer between Kisavai and Rosh Hashanah. That's how we decide. That's how the calendar decides whether Nitzav and Vayelech go together or not. That's all it depends on. Okay. So now let's look at Shavuos for our purposes. The Mora says, Rosh Hashanah, I understand it's Yom HaDin. But what's the Yom HaDin? The Mora says, the Yom HaDin by Shavuos is the Peres Ha'ilah. So before we have the Peres Ha'ilah, we lay in Parshas B'chol Koisai. What does Parshas B'chol Koisai teach us about the brachas and the klolus? So the brachas focus very much on the physical elements of the world functioning properly, and the klolus talk about that part. They talk about the wars and the destruction which comes with it as well. But on the side of the bracha, there's a tremendous amount of focus on the abundance of produce that the world's going to produce. So what is that about? This idea of bracha, is that schar mitzvah? Schar mitzvah hayam aleka. So Rambam says that what it's telling you is like this. When Christ does the ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Rosh is going to make the world function in a very, 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 very fruitful way. So we will have all of our needs to allow us to do more mitzvahs. So it's not schar. You're not going to get your schar for doing your mitzvahs. It's because you're going to have because you do mitzvahs, you get more grain to eat. That's not really such a big bracha. A schar for mitzvah because you get grain. Like, you know, I'd rather have. It's not nothing. It's not bakala to a schar. It's to guarantee Christ will have the wherewithal to be focused on Torah mitzvahs. Rabban also says that it's not schar, but rather what the pasuk is saying is that this is how the world should function normally. This is the natural state of the bria. The bria naturally is extremely fruitful, tremendous produce, tremendous abundance. Because we've done averes, it doesn't function like that. So this is not schar. This is the normal state of being. This is what Gan Eden looked like. The matter says even after Chetav Adam Arishin, before the Mabel, matter says that when they would plant the ground, even after the ground doesn't produce, the Torah describes it does, the klala, it's not going to produce for you. How much? 1 year's crop could supply people for food for 40 years. Zay Shteit Medrash, before Mabel. That's the natural state of the world. It's tremendous ability to produce. So the Torah is describing when Klai Yisrael is going to be we're going to see a tremendous natural state of the Bria producing. The Hizil of Daish is Botzer Yasek Azora, Bachatam Lachem and Masoiva, Bishatam Vetra Baritzachem, and there's going to be Achatam Yashan Noishan, Yashan Mechadash Tritziu. That's the state of Bria, of the Bria. Somewhere else says that Chag HaKotzer refers to the state of shlemus of the Bria. The Kotzer is the moment when something reaches its shlemus. Then you cut it. Then you, the human being, takes advantage of it. You use it. You take advantage of it. But what has happened is you've taken a reality which exists potentially, and you've given it the ability. The Baruch Hashem has given it the ability to expand and develop its potential to its to full reality. And now there's nothing more to do. It's time to take advantage of it, to use it. That's the Koach of Kotzer. So the Baruch Hashem is telling us. The Torah is describing that the Baruch Hashem made the physical reality parallel the spiritual reality, that what Shavuos brings to the table is the ability to take advantage of the potential which exists in ourselves. There's a mistake that we think that the Torah is superimposed upon us to make us something that we're not. Right? Man has limitations, man has issues. The Baruch Hashem offered the Torah, gave the Torah to the world, which allows us to rise above who we are and become something other than what we really are. That's Matan Torah. Mistake. The purpose of the Torah is not to make man anything other than what man is supposed to be. The challenge which we have is we refuse and we don't have the ability to see what man really is. Rav Olber writes in the Alisher Chelik Beis. I don't know where the island's learning with Rav. What are they learning? Alisher Chelik Beis, the older island. Chelik Beis. Where are you learning? What part? Right. So, in the beginning, he writes, if you want to really take advantage of this sefer, if you're learning it yourself without a rebbe teaching it to you, you have to learn it in order. So otherwise, you cannot take advantage of the sefer. So the first order is there's a merecha called Adam, Merechas Adam. The second thing is Merechas HaTorah. The third thing is Hadalan Musar. Says, and now that you spent about 150 pages learning the introduction, now you can take advantage of the Sefer. He starts writing the Sefer, and about pages 30 or 40 he says, by now you should have realized X. If you haven't realized X, you didn't get the whole point of what I've been saying until now. And this is what he writes. It says that the Torah is not to make you something other than what you really are. We are so confused what Adam is. The Torah describes Mashiach, besides that he's going to reinstate Kabbonis, etc., the Torah describes the peace he's going to bring to the world. The Torah describes the greatness of the man. He has the ability to smell. The Mora says he can be marach b'doyin. He can smell and judge a case of dinei Torah between two people. Can tell. He can smell the emes. So that sounds like magic, right? Mishnah Gazach and the Mora, the Hasagas arrive. It says that the reason why they killed Bar Kochba because he wasn't marach b'doyin. He claimed he's Mashiach, and he wasn't able to be marach b'doyin. You're Mashiach. No, you should be able to smell and be and possibly in a case he couldn't do it. He's lying, he's Mashiach, he's falsifying the Torah, no more Bar Kochba. Okay. So this is intrinsic. Why is it so important to know the Mashiach is a Marach Madoyim? Why is it so important? Imagine I want to start a yeshiva, and I want to make the best Talmidim in the world. So I'm going to do two things. I'm going to create a program of a learning schedule which I think will be the best learning schedule, davening schedule, whatever I think they need for their free time and not, etc. All of their take care of a system which I think will bring them to their potential. And then I'm going to people the yeshiva with individuals who represent what I want to accomplish. So that people will be inspired and have role models to know what it looks like. So the Torah gives me that system of what it means to bring a person to his potential. And I need you to know what it's supposed to look like. So the Torah describes Mashiach as that individual. This is what man could be. Man is so perfect and so pure that he has the ability to smell emes and sheker. It sounds extraordinary. It's not a madrigal which we're holding at, but let me finish the thought. I'm not asking us to go beyond our madrigal. So just give you a marshal of this. There's a Maisa Shehoye. This is a documented Maisa. It's brought down in Rav Chanan. Rav Chanan was in America in 1938. He came fundraising for Yeshiva. The war broke out. You know, he went back to Europe to be with his Talmidim. He says he belongs to his Talmidim. He could have saved himself and stayed in America. He did not want to do that. While he was here in America, he didn't drive, so there's people who were driving him, etc. One point in time, they drove him through a certain area of New York City. And Rav Chanan said to them, "What are you doing to me? This place stinks." The name of the place was Times Square. Times Square didn't smell physically. It smelled ruchnius wines. It smelled horribly ruchnius wines. Rav Chanan says the place, it smells bad. Rav Chanan's nose smelled tuma. We're not talking about the Rizal. You know, you're talking about the Rizal that he would be able to look at a mezuzah and tell you what the mezuzah is. Baal Shem Tov, they could look at a mezuzah and tell you the mezuzah is kosher or possible. We're talking about Rav Chanan. We're talking about a person 70 years ago. That's what man could be. That's not something superimposed upon man. That is the perfection of man. So the Pasuk says in Yeshaya that the definition of man is going to be diminished. The more chachmah of kedem they have, the more technology that is developed, the more society looks at other things, they lose the understanding of the value of man. The Nabi describes chachmas kedem, whatever chachmas kedem means, the eastern knowledge, right? All of their wisdom. Technology, that's our version of it. We lose sight of the value of what greatness a man can accomplish. There's nothing in the world, it discusses artificial intelligence, robots can be as smart as human beings. Man is not defined by being smart. Man is not defined by being strong. There's animals which are much stronger than man. And there's computers which maybe are smarter than man. Well, that's not what's defined by us. There's the ability to make decisions which go against the grain of every part of your being because I understand there are greater values and I'm willing to be macro myself for these greater values. Rabbi Tversky once writes, he says, you know, I've never seen a wolf who went on a diet because he felt he did aveiros and he needs to do tshuva. The koyach of godless Adam to make those decisions and live with difficult decisions and do them because you understand there's a greater reality only man has. Torah gives you that balance of understand, bringing them to fruition. The tree is the best muscle for that. The pears are not something new. The pears are the koyachas which exist in the tree intrinsically. And the Russian made a nature in the Briya to bring out those pears. The kotzer, the grain produces the same thing, but it's not as striking as the tree. So the peiros ha'ilan are the mushel in that sense. The chaka kotzer is exactly the time. So the Torah describes this chaka kotzer. Sometimes I believe that people are scared to believe in the potential that they have because that's Machai of them. to change and to grow. I had a bachur here in the high school, so he was grappling with about going, whether he should go to Eretz Yisrael or not to learn. So he said he's afraid to go because he might want to decide that he wants to learn when he's there. It might change his whole attitude to life. So I said, but once you decide that, you want that. He said, but I'm scared to want that. What's familiar to us and what's comfortable is a challenge. Growth comes many times because we're challenged and it's not comfortable anymore. But we are creatures of comfort. We're very comfortable where we are. If I start working on developing my potential, all of them expect it to be more because I realize I can do more. But that's challenging. That's not comfortable. It's not comfortable for me. It's not comfortable for the people around me. All of a sudden, like, what happened to Reingold? He's all of a sudden, he's like, you know, really, I'm becoming a master finally, right? So the French shepherd, like, you know, you're freaking out, aren't you? Why is that a joke? Because it's a challenge to them. If I threw them out, why aren't they? If I'm focusing on becoming more serious and taking life more seriously and using the kaychas that I have, so then I'm challenging that. So the solution is either they have to do that or they have to not be uncomfortable, so they're going to make me feel that I'm strange and they're normal. So the Torah describes this at the beginning of Vimos Ishmuli. It says, so what's the problem? You're not giving a mail in the Torah. The next thing is, Loisasu. So then you're not going to be Kiyomitzis. Well, what's going to happen after that? So after that, you're Mishlo Timid Loisasu. Mois Bacher, Moisim is the next step. I'm uncomfortable when people do. I'm not doing, so I find people which do uncomfortable. So next step is Sener Chachamim. Then Meneas Acher Milasois. And then, so now, I'm in a situation where I'm causing people not to do mitzvahs. So that's uncomfortable. God said so. So the answer is Kaifer Shalit Tzivisin. The Russian didn't give. The next step is Kaifer Baker. We don't like being uncomfortable. So we rationalize and we give excuses. So it's not my problem. This guy is too frum. You know, I think most people have this wonderful understanding of life that people who are not as frum as me are just not frum enough. People who are frumer than me are like too frum. And I sort of got it right. It's like a good approach of life. Where does that come from? Because we don't like being uncomfortable. Because if I'm not getting enough, so then do more. Well, that means I got to change. That's hard. So the answer is those guys are too far from. And now you got to be from, so those guys are not from enough. And it's awesome to see, like, everybody, like Baruch Hashem, like, everybody has it just right. Now, the truth is each person has their right spot. And you should not bet yourself against anybody else. That's not the point. But I can be inspired. I can be affected by somebody else and say that he has a lesson to teach me. But if I don't want that, so then they make me uncomfortable. So then the rabbi gets up and gives the shmooze. So some people leave before the shmooze. No, achashom. Right? And then Menei Zachar Milasois, Kaifer Shalitzivisim, Kaifer Baker. It's all coming because we don't like being uncomfortable. We don't like looking at the reality that the Torah is describing. There's tremendous potential in the world, there's tremendous potential inside myself, and the Torah is the vehicle which allows me to expand and realize my potential, not to become something that I'm not, not to superimpose on me something which I'm not. That's not the point. It's to help me understand, look what mankind can be. Look, the Torah describes Lois Tikar Melois Hitzer. We spoke about this once. The Sefer says there's nothing sweeter than revenge. The Torah describes a man who can have no grudge. Look what a human being can be. This person insulted me publicly. He defamed me. He defamed my family. He threatened me. He hurt me. He insulted me. He degraded me. Move on with life. Look the godless Adam that's possible in such a situation. The Torah describes that man can love somebody else as much as himself. So the Ramban means I'm not jealous at all. I'm happy for you just as much as me. You should be just as rich, just as smart, just as accomplished as me. I'm happy for you. That's what a human being could be. I'm not asking you to be this Meshuggah person. The Torah tells you, the same Torah tells you that there's a mitzvah to have Oedek Shabbos. The same Torah tells me that if you didn't, if your Shalmi tells me, you have to partake of all of the different sweet things the Rosh made in the world. Enjoy the plenty the Rosh made for you. Enjoy it. I'm not asking you to be this ascetic. I'm not asking you to be a Meshuggah, no? But Im calls there that non-Meshuggah can be such a special person. And they say that the Alter from Kelim said, it says that Darwin said man came from monkey. I saw him so salat, but I know man did not come from monkey. That human being is not shy to come from a monkey. I have no titles in the society which believe man came from monkey, because what do you want? They look at human beings and they look at it. We don't control our urges. Whether it's the urges of taiva or of gaiva or of kina or of covet. So we're behemoths. What's the difference in us and a behemoth? But that's not true. Because every person has the moments where he does overcome them. And he does. And look what, and we respect that tremendously. Why do we respect it? In the animal kingdom, they wouldn't respect that. They would say he's a weakling. Because we're not animals. We're such extraordinary beings. Adam is an extraordinary being. And the Torah is the vehicle which gives you that balance of how much. And the Torah makes expectations for us, demands from us, but also gives us the lessons to get there. And it's not an avoid of one day. The Gaon says that a person, his whole life is here to work on his midos. And if not, what's the purpose of life? Which means that you're going to be challenged in that. Once and again and again and again, and when you pass one hurdle, the mashal which they give is, I'm training a guy to go to the Olympics for hurdles, right? So, you know, first we train him to run quickly and get used to balance and jump. Then we put hurdles. So you put a hurdle, you put a 2-foot hurdle. So the first time he does it, he knocks over a few hurdles, you know, doesn't do so good. So you put it through the track again. Finally, after 2 or 3 weeks, he gets it down perfect. He's so excited. He's going to go out tomorrow. He's going to ace it. Comes out, the hurdles are 2.5 feet tall. So, of course, he knocks them over again. Okay? Finally, after a few weeks, he aces that. He's so excited. He's going to mount. He's going to really give a schmack tomorrow. He goes out to another 3 feet tall. Right. So if the goal is that you have something greater to accomplish, you got to keep. We're going to keep stretching you. A parent wants a child to learn how to walk. Right. So the child is holding close enough; it's possible the child could walk. The parent holds something that his hand out to the child, a foot away from the child, and the child takes a step forward to grab the parent's hand. So what does the parent do? He steps back. Because let's see if we can get him to do another step. The kid's goal is to grab the parent's hand. And he's very upset. Why'd you step away from me? Why'd you make it so hard? That's not the parent's goal. The parent's goal isn't to get the kid to take one step. The parent's goal is to teach the child to walk and to run. So the parent steps back and makes it harder. Yes, it's not easy, and yes, it's frustrating, and yes, sometimes you go, why is it so hard? But, and you know, can I take a break right now? Yes, the answer is you can take a break right now. You can take a rest. The Torah gives us a balance. Don't understand what this, but just give a mushroom of that. The Stipe describes what he feels is the perfect day of a bacher. Now, I'm not saying it's the perfect day for every bacher, but just the way he describes it. He says there's 24 hours in a day. A bacher should sleep 8 hours a night, he says. You need to be well rested, right? And you're going to learn much better if you're well rested. Maisa Shahaya. Rashiba was in Eretz Yisrael, and he was by the stipler. The stipler said to him, I hear your bachurim and the yeshiva are not sleeping enough. I want you to go back and say a message in my name, that a bachur does not get 8 hours sleep a night. It's going to be such an amoritz, he won't even understand a pasha in a Mishnah. That was the quote that the Rashiba would say over from the stipler. Rashiba says, I went back to the yeshiva, straight from the stipler. Because I'll say, you don't go back to your... I went straight to Beis Medrash, I gave a clap, I have a shichas on the stipler, to tell the bachurim, and the stipler said, if you don't sleep 8 hours a night, you're going to be such an amoritz, you won't even understand a pasha in a Mishnah. The bachurim smiled at me, went back to doing the same thing we're doing until now. End of quote. Okay, the stipler says, the bachur should sleep 8 hours a night. I had a chavar in yeshiva, slept 8 hours a night. And he learned the whole day, because he wasn't tired. He wasn't exhausted, he wasn't falling apart, he wasn't... The next step, he says, davening. Davening, he says, the stipend's picture of davening is 2 hours a day for davening. Tin chakras, mincha, marav, benching, etc. These are 2 hours a day for... So there's 10 hours used for... He has 14 hours left. Person needs 2 hours a day to relax, to eat, to take a walk, etc. That leaves you with 12 hours to learn. So he didn't say you should learn 14 hours, 16 hours, 18 hours, 20 hours. He said, sleep 8 hours. Relax for 2 hours. Now some bachurim need 3 hours. Okay, whatever the number is. He didn't say that, you know, the goal of Torah is to make you into this gigantic masmid who's going to learn 17 hours out of every 18 hours. 25 hours out of every day, you know. Sleep 8 hours. Relax a little bit. And have a good eat your meal normally. You don't have to rush through your meal to get back to Beis Medrash. And you can still learn a lot of hours in a day. But use those hours well. So the Torah is not expecting something which is extraordinary from us. But by doing those things step by step by step by step of what is moving us forward, we look back after a year, after 2 years, and you say, wow, look how much I've really grown. So that's the message of Chag HaKotzim.